Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is presented by Blue Wire Pods, the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Go check that out today. Brownstown, Wide Receiver One, Green Light with Chris Long, all types of great shows across the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Also, Outsider.com. Joined Outsider. Go check out Outsider today if you have not already done so. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, wherever, whichever social media platform you're most comfortable with, go check out the good folks at Outsider. Excited to start working with them. So go do that. Make sure to check out Matt Green at Matt_W_Green, Valley University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green. He's in the pod today. It is Monday, October 25th on this very podcast from Knoxville, Tennessee. So you know that means Matt Green is on the pod to talk all things college football. Crazy week 8, more AP drops. Lot to unpack with the Tennessee-Alabama game. Lot to unpack with Penn State going down, the LSU coaching rumors heating up, Clemson going down, Kenny Pickett's Heisman case, Oregon State with another big-time Pac-12 after dark win. All kinds of great stuff in college football. So excited to dive into all of that with Matt. Again, go ahead and give him a follow at Matt_W_Green. And yeah, all right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by my fellow University of North Georgia alumni and good friend Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. I'm glad to be back for another week. College football, man. Just gotta love it. Greatest sport on earth.
The greatest sport on earth, he says.
In my humble opinion.
But see, the thing is, though, when people get really upset about that kind of stuff, people really go back and forth. Every weekend, it's without fail. You can just search on Twitter.com that there are people who are like, I don't know how people could prefer the NFL. And then they're the same people like, I don't know how people could prefer college football to the NFL. Like, it's just, it's so silly that I think we've talked about this, of just the people who are adamant about their thing that they like the most being the best thing and not being able to fathom someone else having a different perspective or different taste than their own. It's very strange, but it's every weekend on Twitter.com.
Yeah, pretty standard with just basic human interaction, you know, these days. Like, no one can even understand the other point of view anymore. So it's not even surprising.
No, it's certainly not surprising. Matt Green, how was your weekend? How was your college football watching weekend? What did you get into? How did you organize your Saturday?
Well, this was an excellent weekend. As you know, it's bye week for my beloved Bulldogs, but biggest game in the history of my Braves fandom, if we're being honest. Last time they went to the World Series, I was 9 years old. Like, I didn't really truly appreciate that. Also, in the 90s, like, I didn't realize you even had to earn going to a World Series. I thought that's just something your team did after the season was over. Everyone went to the World Series, right? We were in Atlanta, like, five of the first 9 years I was born, the Braves were in the World Series. And I don't remember, like, any of that, right? So, Bravo's getting the win, I feel like, was the highlight of my weekend, personally. But, yeah, I mean, as far as college football goes, like we said, there were so many games with ranked teams playing unranked teams. And you knew there was going to be an upset in there, and we definitely got a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you organize your day? What did you dive most into? What had your attention?
As far as the noon slate, Kansas and Oklahoma was definitely where the majority of my attention was. I just couldn't believe that was a game for as long as it was. It's just insane. And then 3:30, I'm always watching the CBS game at 3:30. And then once once the night came, you had I was basically just swapping back and forth with Bama, Tennessee, and the Braves. So Bama, Tennessee gave us a good one for a while, but that couldn't get my interest more than the Bravos getting to the World Series.
It was a great moment. It was a great moment the way they won. Tyler Matzik is an absolute legend. Love me some Tyler Matzik. I feel for Luke Jackson. The family group chat was ruthless when it came to Luke Jackson. And, I mean, just the shots of him after were brutal.
Yeah, he was struggling over there.
I would love to see the Waffle House numbers, the sales numbers in Atlanta this weekend. Right? No, like, it's got to be preposterous.
I should have done my part. I did not go to a Waffle House this week, but I should have done my part. I hate the Waffle House slander.
I hate it too. A lot of weird takes. There was a weird Deadspin take. I've looked at Twitter.com way too much today, but certain things of just like the Braves now becoming more of the villain than the Houston Astros is rather funny to me. I don't know. It's very weird. People are not well when it comes to the Braves advancing to the World Series. I don't know. I'm excited. I think you and I agree that we did not see this coming. I don't think anyone had Eddie Rosario just having the NLCS of a lifetime. Just phenomenal stuff. I have no idea what happens in the World Series, but I'm excited. Like, these opportunities don't come around very often. And doing it without Ronald Acuña is just pretty bonkers.
That's probably the craziest part.
And just, hey, like you said last week and something that I'd written about this summer, of just going for it and not punting on this season when you lost Acuña and trading for Duvall, bringing in Soler, bringing in Rosario, trying with Richard Rodriguez, you know, just doing stuff to see what happens. And hey, you see.
Yeah, that was one thing I saw over the weekend, that Anthopoulos, because someone was asking him, you know, what made him, you know, go for it and try to make moves, be a buyer at the deadline. And he basically said back a few years back with the Blue Jays, when Jose Bautista like called out the front office for not making moves and trying to win, like he said it was like the biggest regret of his like professional career, essentially. So he's like, we had a team that was right there kind of hovering around, like, I'm not doing my job if I'm not trying to make moves for us to win and get to the World Series. So I thought that was a pretty cool little anecdote I heard over the weekend.
Absolutely. It was great. We'll get to Kansas, Oklahoma, and everything. I went to the Smokies on Saturday. The noon slate was so bad, Matt. I was out. I couldn't do the noon slate. And it was a delight. It was gorgeous. The traffic getting to Gatlinburg, when you get really close, Gatlinburg was popping, as the kids say. And a lot of doggos all around. They have park rangers that patrol the dog trail, because there's only like two that are allowed for pets in the Smoky Mountain National Park. And they literally have rangers that their job during that portion of the day is just to walk around and make sure you're not going on any of the paths that are not dog friendly. We got stopped. It was a lot. I would be curious to know though if they would stop you guys, because you got Zeus and Maddox. I don't know if this little floof that we've got in Khaleesi matches up to what would be the case if you, Tori, and Zeus and Maddox rolled up. I don't know if the same interaction happens.
Yeah, especially if the park ranger is rocking a hat. Mm-hmm. Zeus is not a fan of hats, you know.
Wait, what do you mean?
He just doesn't like to not be able to see people's face. Like, that's when he's like, hey, like, what the fuck's up with this guy, you know? Like, mm-hmm. If someone's got a hoodie, a hat, if it's dark at all and anyone comes near us, it's like he's just on alert, you know.
Really?
But I feel like he just needs to be able to see your face. I don't know. I get, you know, that's how dogs are, how like they read people's facial expressions. But yeah, that's what we've noticed. Like, the only time Zeus ever like is weird around people, like in public, is if they have like a hat on or like a hoodie. It's weird.
Interesting.
But yeah, I wonder. We would definitely follow the rules though. Tori's a big rule follower, so we wouldn't get on any trails we couldn't be on.
But we didn't even have an opportunity. Like, they stopped it. They nipped that in the bud before you even make the jump, and it wasn't even intentional. We were just trying to find, and it's a big deal. It's a big deal. No bear sightings.
Didn't realize.
Yeah. No bear sightings. I was looking for that, but yeah, It's gorgeous this time of year. Gorgeous at the time of year. But yeah, well, let's get into our headline story of the weekend, Matt Green. The headline story of the college football weekend for you is what?
It's got to be the year of the upset, man. Mm. We had more of it. So we talked about last week on the pod, 6 of the 7 weeks so far we've had a top 10 team go down. 3 weeks in a row we've had a top three team the last 3 weeks lose to an unranked team. And now we have two more again this week. Top 10 teams losing to unranked teams. Iowa State, like, that one was obviously a little different because they were actually favored in the game in just a really weird instance. But Illinois over Penn State, I don't think any of us saw that happening. And just the way Illinois did it, just, you know, 500 yards on the ground? Like, just
Chase Brown went off.
Yeah, and then we had the overtime, and
we'll get to that. Yeah,
honestly, yeah, that was the biggest story of the weekend for me.
The overtime stuff. Well, let's just get into the overtime. Let's get into the new overtime rules. I don't think a lot of people knew that that was a thing until this game happened, and people were flabbergasted by it. I don't think there's ever going to be a universal approval of any kind of overtime format, because it's not as though NFL fans love their format, even when they've tinkered with it a little bit. No one's been 100% in on the college football way of doing things. But I will say, it made sense to me, especially with, so this is something like having, like watching a full season of Josh Heupel's offense, and I'm sure Ole Miss fans are dealing with this too, and a lot of just high octane offenses are going through, is that like this season especially, the snap counts are pretty bonkers, and with the hurry up nature and tempo being just such a critical part of college football now, that like a lot of dudes are dropping and a lot of dudes are tired, and cramps are a real part of the game now. Cramps are legitimate. Like, does everyone cheat as much as Ole Miss does, like they did a week ago? No, it's not that egregious, generally speaking, but I will say it's pretty bonkers to watch, and it's just become part of the game because everyone's getting more snaps in. There's more plays. It's faster. The game moves side to side so much that guys are just exhausted by the fourth quarter. And you rotate, and that helps, but they wanted to shorten overtime because they're like, all right, these guys are already gassed, getting 70 to 80 snaps that we cannot add. We cannot have these 8 to 9 overtime games anymore with the current format, because these guys just don't have it in them. Like, we're just gonna have too many other injuries, and they're trying to protect that, and I get that, but I don't know if this works either. And I think it's just silly, and we look at the record books and how this game was won. It was quite silly, and it's just if you're a Penn State fan, I imagine this is a very, very frustrating way to lose. Great win for Illinois, obviously, and Bielma, and a signature win here, but I don't know, this was just silly, where I'm like, even with the win, it feels more like a tie to me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this was a joke. Like, this didn't decide who the better team was in any way. And, like, that's what overtime is ultimately for. Like that's why you see basketball. It's like, yeah, just put 5 minutes on the board. We'll just keep playing. Like, that's the whole purpose of overtime, is just figure out who the better team is. Because we're not satisfied with ties, you know? And it's like, well, what do we have, like, 3-7 overtime games in, like, 25 years at that format? Like, 7 overtime games weren't something that was just happening that was like, okay, we need to put a stop to this. Like, we need to do something. Like, as far as Major League Baseball goes, it's like, they play 162 games. Like, no one wants to see 15, 16, 17 innings of, you know, maybe 6 or 7 straight innings of scoreless baseball. And then you have position players pitching and stuff like that. And it just totally throws off the pitching rotation for the following days. It's like, that was something that was a problem that you needed to find a solution for. I feel like there was no problem that they were finding a solution for, like, in my opinion. Like, if a crazy game is, like, just going to happen, it's going to happen. You can't just, like that LSU-Texas A&M game. Like, we've never seen a game like that. And then it happens one time, and we're like, oh, well, we need to make sure this never happens again. Like why? Like, I'm confused. Like, I understand the whole player safety, like, you're not wanting games to go super long, but like that type of thing rarely ever happened. So it seemed like a huge overreaction to me. And then on top of that, the solution seems like you went from, like, maybe if this registered on a 2 of a problem, you went with a solution that was a 10. You know what I mean? Like, how about we just have no field goals in overtime or no extra points in overtime? You just have to go for 2 every time. Like, we're not going to – we just went straight to PKs, like, in the third overtime now. It's just – it's such a weird way to decide football. Like, the only thing – I know we talked about this on Saturday. The only solution I could see if you're trying to do the kind of PK style is to give someone 4 downs from the 10-yard line, because that's, like, still football. You know, we have – first down, second down, third down. This whole thing with the 2-point conversion, like, obviously they called it a 2-point conversion, so maybe I'm dumb for not knowing how many points. But once it started, I was kind of like, well, wait, did they get 2 points for this? Did they get 6 points? Like, I don't know. It was just such a weird format. And then you had what they both got field goals in the first 2 overtimes. And then you had, like, 4 or 5 straight overtime periods where neither team converted. It's like... Mm-hmm. After the third or fourth one, you're just like, this is a joke. They're running one play from the 3-yard line. Like, what does that say about who is the better football team? Like, I thought it was just a failure. I feel like the fact that it happened this early makes me think there's no way this stands, like, long term. Like, because I think there is, like, a lot of debate on what the right overtime football format is. Like you said, but it seems like people who prefer college, like, far and wide, seem to prefer the college overtime rule. Like, if nothing else, it's fair, and two teams have equal chance to score from the 25. I just hate, like, I would back it up to the 50 if it were up to me, because I just hate you do nothing and then you can still get a field goal. Like, that seems terrible. Like, there's no point of being rewarded with any sort of points if you can't get any yards. But I just hate the pro format of potentially losing a coin toss costing you a game. Like, that's the worst of all the options to me. But what we saw at Illinois and Penn State, it was just, I feel like it was ugly enough to where, like, surely this rule won't stay.
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, how long was the previous overtime rule in effect? Like, our entire lifetime, right?
Yeah, but I feel like there was no real complaints. Like, yeah. it was awesome, honestly. Like, I feel like getting rid of, like, any extra points, like, at all, like, that would help, like, from the first overtime on. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, just maybe you can't kick field goals. Like, maybe that's the solution. But this whole PK system, like, we're not going to have these 7 overtime games like LSU, Texas A&M a few years back. And if we do... It's like, let's appreciate that for being, like, one of the greatest games in college football history. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a 22-inning baseball game where you watch 9 scoreless innings from the 12th to the 20th, you know? It's like, that was nonstop action. People, like, converting fourth downs, like, making insane catches. Like, I don't feel like any true college football fan watched A&M LSU a few years ago and was like, oh no, this is terrible. We need to put a stop to this. This is not what football should be. Like, I felt that I just didn't want one of these teams to lose because it was just an incredible game.
That's fair. That's fair. We'll see what happens. I don't know. We'll see. Your green line, Matt's stat of the weekend, sir. It's time for green line. What do you have for me?
All right, so we all saw the craziness of the Wake Forest Army game this weekend. It was 70-56 final score. So the Wake Forest offense, I know
the Clawfense, as it's known,
scored 70 points with 17 minutes time of possession. Just absurd what they were doing. But that's not the most absurd part of what they did on Saturday. They had 638 yards on Saturday. Do you know how many points or how many yards they could have possibly gotten on Saturday? 683. This team got all but 45 yards that they could have potentially gotten in the entire game. Like, just every single drive, 80 yards away from the end zone, 80 yards, touchdown. Look at this drive chart. It's just absurd. 11 drives in the game, touchdown, turnover on downs. That was the one drive that they didn't get a touchdown on. So touchdown, turnover on downs, touchdown. That was the first half. Then in the second half, touchdown. Then the defense gets a pick six. touchdown. And then they knee it to end the game. Like, just absurd offensive efficiency for Wake Forest. Like, maybe the greatest game offensive game ever played. I don't know. Probably up there. I'm sure Georgia Tech in that, Cumberland College or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Who could forget?
I'm sure they got every possible yard they could have in that game. But, yeah, just an insane performance by Wake Forest offense on Saturday.
I like it. I nailed that one. I told you that was going to be a must-see, a must-watch. I had a great weekend as a whole, to be honest.
Yeah, you definitely did. I think the craziest part was just you don't think of it, you know, the triple option, the run-heavy team can't get in a shootout. Like, that was, like, the craziest form of a shootout in college football history. One team's just going 80 yards in three plays, and the other team's going 80 yards in 15 plays every
yeah.
time they get the ball. Like,
that's true. A very different dichotomy. That's interesting. Well, let's get into how we did this weekend, Matt Green. My spidey senses tell me that I had a pretty solid weekend.
You did have a solid weekend, but I don't want to burst your bubble.
Oh, no.
You did not make up any ground.
Oh, no.
But you did not lose any ground. So
wait, how did I not make up any ground? We had a lot of differentiating picks.
We had a lot of differences, and I ran the numbers multiple times because I thought the same thing. But we were both 7-4 against the spread, and we were both 7-4 overall.
So how is that possible?
I can show you the data afterwards.
This is why we're both journalism majors, is because this is preposterous to me.
I mean, do you want to run through it right now?
Let's run through it. So who, just to refresh the listeners on what transpired a couple days ago.
Both picked UCLA to win and cover. Mm. Both picked Wake Forest to win and cover.
Mm-hmm.
I picked Purdue. You picked Wisconsin. I picked Pitt. You picked Clemson.
Did I pick Clemson?
I picked Oklahoma State. You picked Iowa State. We both picked Minnesota. Both picked Louisville. I picked San Diego State. You picked Air Force. I picked Fresno, you picked Nevada, who did cover. And Oklahoma State, that was the other one. Oklahoma State lost, but they did cover. We both picked Notre Dame. I picked Utah, you picked Oregon State.
Hmm. Okay. It was the group of five that sunk me from really making up a bunch of ground. My Wolfpack let me down. And my Falcons. That's what I get. But man, I feel good about the Oregon State one. Nailed that one. And the Wisconsin one. The Wisconsin was my lock of the week.
Is that right?
Yeah, I had Wisconsin as the lock of the week. Wisconsin hasn't lost to Purdue. They have like a Bama-Tennessee situation going on over there. And we know what happened. You had that stat of like what happened the last time Purdue
You're
was
right.
ranked.
And, and I didn't believe it. All the signs are pointing against Purdue. And that was Zeus's home dog of the week also. Mm. That's his fourth straight loss, home dog.
Goodness gracious, Zeus.
Zeus, maybe we need to get Maddox in there, see if he can have some more success as a home dog. But he doesn't have much success with the picture and staying mm-hmm. still with a piece of paper hanging to his chest. So that's why he's out. But
Zeus has not been shooting over those social media pictures either as of late.
That's fair.
He's been hiding out. He's been embarrassed. He doesn't want to put his name and his likeness to his picks anymore.
Yeah, he is. We need to get him back out of his shell. The best of the best can miss some. So mm-hmm. we'll get back in there. But yeah, this was Wisconsin's 15th straight win over Purdue. And Purdue, like you said on the podcast, going back to 2005, their fourth consecutive loss as a ranked team. So Purdue's just they're not top 25 material, and I feel foolish. Like, so our pick'em we have every week with my buddies, he sets it up like the bowl pick'em, you know. So like you do the confidence, like 10 points are the one you're most confident about, 9, 8, that kind of thing. And I put 10 on Purdue. That was my most confident one.
What?
And I missed like two or three games or something in the whole pick'em. And Purdue was one I decided to put a lot of points on. There was some crazy games though to Like, I got like my 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, but I missed my 10. It was tough.
It's funny because I probably would have picked Wisconsin as my 10.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. I should have gone Oklahoma State because I wasn't confident Oklahoma State was going to win, but I was definitely confident that they were going to keep it close. But what can you do? You know, life's a dance. You learn as you go.
Do you have any of those quotes around your house? Do you have any of those?
That's just a little John Michael Montgomery. I know you know okay. that song.
Is that a who? What?
That's a 90s country song. Do you know that? Life's a Dance?
I have not heard that one.
Oh, man. That's a classic.
Is it good?
Right there.
I'm going to check it out.
Classic.
All right. I'll tune it in. I'll check it out after this.
Just the message. Life's a dance. You learn as you go.
It's true.
Sometimes you lead and sometimes you follow.
But, oh, I've heard this. I know what you're talking about.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. It's a classic for sure.
There you go. There you go. Well, let's get into our pick'em games, then we'll get into the rest of the slate because this was just a crazy slate, Matt Green. Oregon, UCLA, game day was here. Oregon beat UCLA in a weird way. This was obviously a gigantic game for Chip Kelly. Dorian Thompson-Robinson gets knocked out. Chase Garber's brother, Ethan Garber's, had to come in. He had a rough ending there for him, and he was pretty devastated. That stunk for him. But the biggest takeaway for this one for me was just Thibodeau could not be defended. Like, that dude's going number one overall to the Detroit Lions next year. Like, that's just done. Like, we can just go ahead and pencil that one in, that that man is going number one overall, because it was, when you go back and watch the highlights and you just watch the tape of like him getting trying, or UCLA trying to block that man, it was a fool's errand, because it was not happening. He looked like Aaron Donald out there, and UCLA had no answers. And the thing is, what's frustrating if you're UCLA too, is that you shut down Trent Dye. Like, they could not run the ball at all, 35 total yards on 14 carries, and Oregon has had no passing offense whatsoever with Anthony Brown, and he did enough. I mean, he had two late picks that kept UCLA in it, but he was great through the air, and you're just like, well, we made Anthony Brown beat us, and well, that stinks, and it happens, but that's my strongest takeaway, is that they beat them in a different way. You have to win differently if you want to be an elite team, and Oregon won differently, but Oregon's not a playoff team. This is not your typical Oregon. Like, Thibodeau is a monster and a Chase Young type, but like, this is just not a playoff caliber group, and they're getting stomped if you put them in there. So let's hope that the Pac-12 does not have any representative, because Matt, there's no one who deserves to be in that group as of right now.
Yeah, I think if you look up and you see you held Oregon 121 yards rushing, mm-hmm. like you had to be confident on your ability to win this game. But like you said, they made enough plays in the passing game to get it done. And I really would have liked to have seen how it could have ended. You know, if DTR doesn't get hurt there at the end, that was really unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, Oregon, don't get me wrong, definitely does not look like a top four team to me. But can you get to the playoff on a technicality? Because if Ohio State is as good as kind of everyone thinks they are, like, even though that win is so long ago, once the playoff is selected, like, that win is still over Ohio State at Ohio State too. Like, can no one actually think you're a top four team, but you get in just based on that one, like, notch on the resume?
Well, I think in that scenario, if they're both one loss, you still have to put Oregon in. Like, then games don't matter. I think it would set such a bad precedent.
Exactly. And say we're talking about, you know, say Georgia runs the table and Georgia's undefeated, Cincinnati's undefeated, and Oklahoma's undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have one loss Oregon versus one loss Ohio State. It's like, it's really no question you have to put Oregon in.
Oh, well, I have a question for you. It doesn't have to be Oregon. If you do this whole model, though, what if it's one loss Oregon, one loss Pitt, and one loss Ohio State? Do you give Pitt or Oregon that four spot?
I give it to Oregon. Just
interesting.
Pitt's loss to Western Michigan is just, it's just telling. You know, it's
okay.
Like, it sucks because Pitt is going to be penalized or Wake Forest are going to be penalized for what Clemson has never been penalized for. you know? And it's like, even they'll have a win over Clemson on their schedule, but people are like, oh yeah, Clemson's not good, so that doesn't matter. It's like, that never kept Clemson out of the playoff.
But true.
I think it's going to keep one of these ACC teams out in the playoff because they don't have the cachet of their name and what they did in the previous season to be carrying, and the preseason ranking to be carrying them.
That's a good point. I hadn't considered that. That's going to be frustrating if that's the narrative that comes out of this. But we're so close, Matt Green, to an undefeated Wake Forest versus a one-loss Pitt team in the ACC title game.
We got several weeks for that to go, though. Like, Wake Forest has got a long way to go before they get there.
Well, speaking of Wake, S&P Plus gives them a 1% chance of finishing the season undefeated. 1%. Do you know who has the highest odds of finishing the season undefeated, though?
Is it Oklahoma?
It is not, but in the top three. It is
Georgia or Cincinnati.
Okay. It is Cincinnati, almost a 50% chance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a fun fact for you.
Yeah, I like it. If you look at their schedule, they have nothing else. Like, there's no other big roadblock on their schedule to them getting to 12-0. Wake versus Army, we did the Green Line stat of the weekend, but Wake Forest is now the number 13 team in the country, and that is their highest ranking since 1947. What Clawson is doing in this group, it doesn't even matter if they go undefeated or they run the table. Like, they're not winning the national title, but that's not what this is about. It's just this dude doing it with the resources that he has at Wake Forest, the smallest school in FBS, and he's just making it work. And this group is incredible to watch. They fight hard for this staff. Army's not a pushover by any means, and this offense is just humming. Like, Clawson's offense is just, whew, it is fun to watch. And man, Wake is so likable, and this is just a cool win.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like we said, we talked about it a little bit for a second ago, but just one of the most absurd shootouts you'll ever see. And honestly, if it weren't for that one pick six and that fake field goal they ran, it was there. And but I guess you see the difference in arm strength in a D1 quarterback versus a D1 kicker or D1 holder. But yeah, so I think it's a solid win for Wake Forest. But looking at their schedule moving forward, I just don't see how they get out of this undefeated.
Mm. I think it's possible. I think the fact that they've tripped up so much lately, it's kind of like the Oklahoma State thing. Like, I still don't believe Oklahoma's not going to get tripped up with what we've seen. Like, to need what they needed to have happen in the Kansas game and to be in it with Kansas for that long, I don't believe that Oklahoma's remaining unscathed. Like, I don't believe that's happening. But we'll see. We'll see. Did you have any other thoughts on Wisconsin-Purdue? Jeff Brohm, one of the worst offensive performances under Jeff Brohm. They had 206 total yards in this one against Wisky's defense. Like, Jim Leonard obviously is an elite defensive play caller and coach up there in Madison, but this was just a brutal, brutal effort after what they did to that amazing Iowa defense the week before. I mean, that's also kind of got to be rough to go from Iowa's defense to Wisconsin's in back-to-back weeks. But 24 attempts for minus 13 yards in the ground, like, Wisconsin's defense just overwhelmed the Boilermakers.
Yeah, without a doubt. I feel like, and then Wisconsin also found an offense apparently too. So.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't know if they found an offense.
Well, their offense managed to move the football and score points.
True.
Which we haven't seen them do all year. I mean, yeah, they weren't doing anything differently. Like, Graham Mertz had 8 attempts. But, yeah, we finally saw points being scored by the Badgers.
Absolutely.
Which, that's honestly what I was picking against. I was like, well, Purdue just did they just did this. They played a better Iowa team, and they spanked them. And I think you see, you know, the difference winning the turnover battle, you know, that just changes the outcome of games. So Purdue clearly wasn't that much better than Iowa. They just had one of those Saturdays where everything came together, and Wisconsin brought them back down to where they should be, I guess.
For sure. For sure. Pitt, Clemson. This was a mess. This was wild. DJ Uiagalelei gets benched in the second half of this one. I just, if you had told me before the season, like, we're on this podcast and we're talking with this this fortune teller, like, we just have them on the pod in July, and they come to us and they're like, hey, so here's what's gonna happen before the season's over. Spencer Rattler and DJ Uiagalelei are both getting benched and probably not starting for their team down the stretch. We're like, no, that's not happening. What are you talking about? Spencer Rattler's going number one in the draft next year. DJ, like, what was the last Clemson quarterback who struggled under Dabo in this group? Like, what are we talking about here? What's happening?
Kelly Bryant.
I mean, not really, though. Kelly Bryant was good enough to win a national title. Like, it was, he did not struggle at Clemson. He just wasn't Trevor Lawrence.
Kelly Bryant was definitely not good enough to win a national title. That's literally the reason he got benched.
No, I disagree. Like,
Kelly Bryant was a game manager, and they got smashed by Alabama in that playoff the one year he was the starter. And that they weren't even competitive either. Like, the offense couldn't even move the ball. That's why Kelly Bryant was just, he was, I mean, I think he threw like more picks than touchdowns, or like the same number. He threw like 13 touchdowns, like 11 picks or something as one year as the starter. Like, he was just super average. And that was honestly Dabo's 100% thinking. He's like, you know, we could run the table and beat our entire schedule again this year with Kelly Bryant as the quarterback, but we can't win the national championship with him. And that was why you saw him. And honestly, I feel like he made a bold decision to make that decision like four games in, and then it almost cost him after he transferred and Trevor Lawrence got hurt. But obviously that was 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But on Saturday, yeah, like, honestly, I don't know who I would have been more surprised to if you just had to say, like, one of these guys, Rattler or Uiagalelei, is going to be benched seven games in. I guess it would have been less surprising with Rattler, just because you know Caleb Williams is this, you know, five-star quarterback behind him. But we'd seen him play, like, you also saw Rattler play so much more, and he looked good. So, but in the small amounts you've seen Uiagalelei play, like, he looked really good too. So it is insane to think that we're talking about a Clemson team that, I think they've scored 20 points one time this entire season. Like, this offense is just, it's hard to describe. Like, none of us expected Clemson to drop off like this. And Pitt, if not for that loss to Western Michigan, I think they had enough preseason like buzz that they would be in the top 10 right now. Like, Wake Forest is like, we're going off of decades of reputation of Wake Forest to kind of like, are you sure? Okay, we'll put them ranked. And they just keep winning, and now they're up to 13. Like, I feel like Pittsburgh had enough respect that if they started the season, you know, especially after beating Tennessee too, were they ranked versus Tennessee, maybe around 25 or so, like, they would be like number six or number seven or so if they were still undefeated. But that loss to Western Michigan, that really hurts them. But Kenny Pickett, the Kenny Pickett Heisman talk, is it getting any louder?
I mean, he's the favorite. I don't know how you don't have Kenny Pickett and his numbers and what Pitt's offensively just, but like, it's,
I still can't call him the favorite though.
Then who is the favorite?
Like, what Matt Corral has done is still more impressive than
I disagree.
Than Kenny Pickett.
I don't think Matt Corral's like doing that at Pitt. I don't think that's happening. Matt Corral is like the ultimate product of the Lane Kiffin offense.
It's possible, but also his rushing numbers are, like, what he's done on the ground is enough for, like, those Heisman caliber stats. And the fact that he's doing it versus SEC competition, like, you feel like that's going to carry more weight. Like, that's, I think, Pittsburgh's biggest thing. It's like, okay, Kenny Pickett's had good stats.
He has, like, 23 TDs, one pick, against,
you know?
88.1 QBR, third in the country. He's ninth in yards, fourth in TDs, second in picks thrown. I mean, this dude, at home, he's averaging 10.1 yards per attempt, 15 touchdowns, one pick. I mean, 73% completion percentage.
Ahead of, like, Kenneth Walker.
Yeah, for sure.
See, I don't know about that. Like, he's almost, I don't think
Matt Green, I need to stop you. This is the Pittsburgh Panthers with Pat Narduzzi. That is what's happening here. Like, Pitt is in play for a college football playoff opportunity. They control their
they're
own destiny
really
here.
Not, though.
They are. If
they're,
they went out, they're in. They have a better case.
No.
Yes.
They have like a 1% chance of getting in the playoff.
Why? Who's getting in over them?
It has to be madness for them to get in.
Why?
Because, like, I mean, for one, just looking at the teams, like, okay, we talked about Georgia, Cincy, Ohio State, Oklahoma.
Wait, let me stop you on Cincy, though. Are we sure a one-loss ACC champion is not getting in over Cincinnati? It hasn't happened yet. We haven't put in a group of five yet.
Is Pittsburgh a better team than Cincinnati, though?
Do I think Pitt is? I think Pitt could beat Cincinnati. I think the line would be like 2 or 3 on a neutral site.
That's, I guess they do have a shot of sense of...
We've just penciled in an undefeated Cincinnati. Why?
But it's like, why would do you think they're getting in over Oklahoma, Ohio State, or Oregon?
Ohio
State, like, two lost Alabama. Like,
no, you can't do
that. They're better than them, but
no, you can't do that.
No, I wouldn't. You wouldn't. It wouldn't be right to put them in, but
I don't know. I think they're very much in play. I think the broader point here is that they're very much in play. Like, if they run the table, they have a good shot. Like, I don't, it's not a guaranteed shot, but they have a good shot. And I think they might have the Heisman winner on under center. Like, I would not be surprised if Matt Corral, if Kenny Pickett takes him the Heisman this season. We'll see. I'm rooting for
him. According to ESPN's playoff predictor, they have a 15% chance of making the playoff.
What's Cincinnati's?
But it's a 67% chance if they run the table and win the conference title.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good, but that's like, that's definitely not being in control of your own destiny.
That's,
you know,
7-10 almost.
Yeah, but I'm saying if Ohio State runs the table, they're in almost. It's like 90-something%. You know, Oregon runs the table, they're probably 90% in. Like, Oklahoma,
that would be silly to me. Oregon's not a better team than Pitt. Like, they're just not.
Yeah, but I mean, the resume says otherwise. I think the resume, Oregon's resume, is definitely more impressive than Pittsburgh's to this point. But I think it's just that one loss on Pitt's schedule, it's a really bad loss. Like, that's
true.
Just, and I just think that's,
I mean, Western Michigan's not terrible. They're pretty solid group of five team this year.
For group of five, they're pretty solid. And, you know, beating Wake Forest, like, that's the thing, is like, that's going to be your big win.
Well, I think they're big wins over the Tennessee Volunteers.
Of course. But no one's going to respect the Wake Forest win. So you're like, hey, we got a top 20 win over here. And people are like, well, yeah, that's Wake Forest. Like, whatever. That's fine. Like, so no, that's not going to be enough. That might be enough to get them into the top 10. But I think at the end of the day, I don't see it working out for them. Like, they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt that, like, Clemson has gotten for all these years.
That's fair. Well, let's move forward here. Oklahoma State. Oh, actually, the last thing on Clemson Pitt that I want to mention. So the offense is sputtering. Clemson out of the playoff. They're on their way to play in Tennessee in the Duke's Mayo Bowl I saw today. That would be an absolute delight, because Tennessee is drubbing this Clemson team. If they are drubbing.
Easy with drubbing now.
I can't wait for the folks to see what happens in 2 weeks. So, like, Tennessee gets a bye this week, and then they go to Lexington. I think I'm going to make the trip. But what they're going to do in bluegrass country, it's going to be rough. Like, they're in for a rude awakening in Wildcat territory. They're going to beat the brakes off the Wildcats. Like, that's coming. Tennessee is the number three team in the East. Maybe the number two. Well, I mean, we'll see against Georgia.
You think they're going to beat the brakes off Kentucky?
I do. I don't think Kentucky can score enough. I think Tennessee's offense, especially with the healthier they get, the bye and getting everybody back, there's just too much explosion. Like, there's just too much explosion on this Tennessee offense.
That's in Lexington, right?
It is.
So that'll be an interesting. I was just looking at that week, trying to kind of figure out when. I mean, it's going to tomorrow. The game times are going to come out, but I was trying to kind of figure out when some of those games are going to be.
I'm going to guess it's a night game, right? It's probably the ESPN or network.
I think it'll be the ESPN night game. Yeah, it's like, I think Alabama LSU is that week. It's like, that might be the noon ESPN game at this point. Like, with Auburn A&M, I think should be
the 3:30
CBS. Yeah, exactly. And then Georgia Missouri that day. Oof. Feels like one of those, like, 7 o'clock SEC network games, you know, like
that's a Jefferson Pilot sports game right there.
Yeah, something like well, but Tennessee South Carolina is that day too, and assuming, like,
no, not Tennessee South Carolina,
or I mean Florida South Carolina. Okay. Is that day too, so, like, assuming that Georgia beats South Carolina, or Georgia beats Florida, South Carolina, Florida, that has all the makings of a noon game. Like, no one cares about that. So,
yeah.
But then you got Ole Miss Liberty, too, that day. So the Hugh Freeze game. So
but Liberty has been awful as of late. That's lost a lot of luster.
True. That's probably a SEC Network Plus game or something. Who knows?
But what's funny is just that that's going to have the most amount of NFL personnel of any game in the college football season this year. Just for Matt Corral and Malik Willis, who both are in play for first-round quarterbacks. So
yeah, that's interesting.
But the reason I brought that all back to Clemson real quick, Dabo already had to say no to LSU this week, kind of, but he didn't really give a definitive answer. It seemed erroneous, or maybe not even erroneous. It just seemed very unlikely. It seemed... I couldn't wrap my head around Dabo leaving Clemson. Like, it's just, he has a monopoly on the ACC. He's built this juggernaut where no one's anywhere close to Clemson until this year. Like, everything's
falling. Yeah, I was about to say...
But that's why I'm saying it, where I'm like, I couldn't imagine a situation where Dabo, because I had said before that, like, Clemson's probably the best Power 5 job in the country. You're almost guaranteed a playoff spot. Like, their schedule is just so weak, and their talent differential is just so large that, I mean, it's just amazing. It's just a factory that there's just, I don't see how it slows down. And then, of course, it just slows down, and you're like, okay, what if Dabo did, like, LSU is a better job than Clemson. Would you like to guess how many of the last three LSU football coaches did not win national titles, Matt Green?
Well, I happen to know that all three did win titles.
Yeah. Like, we talked about on the pod last week, it's a top three job in college football. Like, Clemson's in the top five,
also,
but, like,
also,
LSU's
Ed
in
Orgeron
there.
Wasn't even a good coach.
And he won a title. Yeah.
And I honestly think you can question how good of a coach Les Miles was, because, like, that man didn't even seem like he knew what the hell was going on in the football program. Like, he seemed like the ultimate, like, figurehead, like, personality, like, type coach. So, like, he made some of the worst just game management, clock management decisions, like, ever. So, and he won, he, like, LSU's resources couldn't prevent him from winning a championship. So, yeah, LSU, I feel like, is that short list, but Dabo, it's a better job, but Dabo would just be crazy to go anywhere. Like, if Dabo was leaving for anywhere other than Alabama, it's just a dumb.
I wouldn't want to follow Saban if I'm Dabo. I have no interest in the Bama job. I have no interest in that.
I agree with that, but that's the only place that even makes any sense.
No, LSU makes sense. That is a few, like, Georgia and LSU make sense.
See, but I just don't, I think Dabo just did his own thing at Clemson. I think as a new guy, I just don't think he's going to create the same kind of buzz. Like, I don't know.
Wait,
like,
hold on. Did you just say you don't think Dabo would create any buzz in Baton Rouge?
I don't think he didn't just come in with the same cachet, though.
Like, oh, he 100% does.
See, I just don't agree. I think Clemson's kind of doing their own thing. Like, they're doing it their own way. Like, when I say the cachet, I mean, like, If year one he comes into LSU and loses three or four games, it's like, well, you didn't win a championship for us, so we don't care what you did at Clemson in 2016 and in 2018. Like, if you don't win anything for us quickly, like, you're out of here. Like, there's no built-in rapport with the fan base. You know, like, at Clemson, he's on his own terms. Like, they could have two losing seasons in the next 2 years. And he's not even on the hot seat. Like, he can do whatever he wants at Clemson. I think he'd be making a huge mistake to go anywhere, honestly. But Alabama's the only one I think you could even justify, just because it's so much better than everywhere else. Obviously, what you're inheriting from Saban is just so much better than everyone else. And the fact that he is played at Alabama, that's the only one that makes any sense at all to me for him to leave.
That's fair. But we'll see what happens. I am so curious to see who gets the LSU job. I would, like, go ahead and pencil in Franklin at USC, but, like, I have no earthly idea where.
We were talking about that this weekend, but yeah. With Penn State, like, if you look at their schedule, like, they got Ohio State coming up, they got Michigan State.
Oof.
Like, this team could lose three more games, and if they lose three more games, a 7-5, like, you're LSU, you're the hottest job in the entire country. You're going to go take the guy that was going 7-5 at Penn State?
Like, I mean, to be fair, he has been incredibly successful. Aren't they still in like the top five in recruiting for the 2022 cycle? Like, they're Franklin.
It's one of those misleading. It's one of those misleading top fives. Like when Tennessee was in the top five a couple years ago. Like, or was that last year? The 2020 class when they had like 26 commits in the middle of June, July.
That sounds like correct.
Fourth,
yeah,
like the third or fourth ranked class, but it's like, if you see the, it's just a full class. Penn State has like 25 commits right now. Like, once everyone else starts catching up and getting as many guys on board, it's a top 10 class. Maybe,
I was going to say, he still gets enough to be in the blue chip ratio. Like, he's still good enough to win a national title. He recruits well enough to win a national title. And if you give him the USC resources, like, I don't know. I think
the
that would
USC
be a...
USC makes sense to me.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think he's a slam dunk for LSU. I think that would kind of be a...
Okay.
I don't think that would be a sexy hire, but I
LSU could go take someone's NFL coach, honestly. Like,
but what
LSU
makes it funny to me is, like, I think Franklin would not be a sexy LSU name, but like Mel Tucker is getting all this praise, and I'm like, okay, hold on. The Mel Tucker at Michigan State, what he's doing is great. Like, it's awesome. They're undefeated. We'll see what happens this week in the Big House. But like, okay, James Franklin revitalized Vanderbilt. He was winning double digit games at Vanderbilt. He has put Penn State in a position to be in the playoff. Right.
That's close to double digit at Vanderbilt.
9 wins at Vanderbilt is going undefeated. That's insanity. So I saw some like James Franklin as a fraud stuff after that. Like, that always pops up when teams like that and coaches like that lose. But I'm like, no. James Franklin is not a fraud. James Franklin is an elite top 10 college football coach. Like, your program would be beneficial outside of a couple different ones from having him as your head coach. Like, this is preposterous. And
that's true. I mean, LSU would get better.
Yes.
James.
Like, I would all, but my broader point was that, like, who is the safer bet between Franklin and Mel Tucker to win at LSU? And I think the answer is easily Franklin, but I think Mel Tucker would inspire more excitement for some reason.
That's, I think it's sometimes the known versus the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you feel like with Franklin, he's been around long enough to know he's really good, but he might not be great. Whereas Mel Tucker is the mystery box, you know? And so you're like, well, this guy could be as great as anybody. He just hasn't done it yet. It's definitely the riskier hire. I think the safer hire definitely feels like Franklin. And honestly, just talking with you just now about it, I feel like I'm more on board with Franklin to LSU than I was at the start of this conversation. Because, like I said before, like, Ed Orgeron, we know, was not a good coach. I'm personally questioning how good of a coach Les Miles was. Franklin comes into LSU, you know he's a good coach. And with how the way LSU is basically able to recruit their region better than like any other program, I feel like, just locking down the in-state guys, like, LSU just always has that elite talent. A coach like Franklin could definitely win championships.
If you're Lincoln Riley, would you listen?
That's tough.
Because you're moving to the SEC anyway.
Yeah, that's tough because, like, we talk about there's certain programs, like, I think we kind of talk LSU, Georgia, and Alabama, or those three big jobs, but, like, I feel like Oklahoma and Ohio State are those outside the SEC that are just as good as the SEC jobs, and they're even in that group with Clemson. They're better than Clemson as programs, but as far as not having to play the SEC, obviously Oklahoma will have to play the SEC moving forward. But I think,
can right I tell now, you who my pick is based on what I've listened to in the reporting of this?
What's that?
Seems like Scott Woodward is a swing for the fences guy. Like, he's going big game hunting. Like, he's probably going to call Saban about coming back.
Yeah, I do feel like it's going to be a home run swing for sure.
I think it's either going to be like Bob Stoops or Chris Peterson.
Chris Stoops
coached in the XFL recently. People forget hasn't been like retired. Like, I don't think he may love the idea of getting back into recruiting. He's only 61. He's only 61.
Stoops wouldn't excite me. I feel like if I was an LSU fan, Mark Stoops would excite me almost more than Bob Stoops.
I'm talking about the name stuff. Woodward doesn't, like, I think Mark Stoops has done a tremendous, tremendous job in Lexington. I just think the vibe I'm getting in when you read between the tea leaves, you know, listen to the reporting, read the reporting, it seems like this dude's going big, big game hunting. He's just going for a home run because, like we said, the last three coaches have won national titles. Like, you, the resources there are insane. Like, it's.
But it seems to me like, wouldn't that drive you to pick, make the safest move possible?
True.
Because it's like, well, we got guys that are lunatics that can't even coach that can win championships here. If we just get a normal guy.
Do you know who I would call my first pick?
The limit. Who's that?
Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Brian Kelly with those resources and him to be able to turn the narrative where they're like, oh, people think I can't win the big one because I can't beat Alabama and Clemson in succession or Ohio State or whatever. Give me LSU rosters.
Yeah, and then when you talk about it, like, I think ultimately Lincoln Riley is safe because I think that's a lateral move. Like, LSU isn't better than Oklahoma, you know? Like, it's just as good.
I would say it's better, like, but not by much.
Yeah, I think it is, but yeah, it's not enough to just up and leave. Like, same with Ryan Day. Like, LSU isn't better enough than Ohio State. I think it might be incrementally better job if we're having to come up with a list, but it's the top of the top of college football. But those, I feel like Saban, Kirby, Ryan Day, and Lincoln Riley seem like the only names that are off limits for LSU. It seems like other than that, they could get whoever they could potentially get whoever they want. Like Luke Fickell, they want him. Brian Kelly, they want him. Like any other coach in college football seems like they could potentially leave wherever they're at for LSU, and it would be an upgrade. Chris Peterson, that just doesn't feel like reading that article we read, mm-hmm. talked about on the podcast a few months back, that just doesn't feel like something Chris Peterson would do. Like, LSU, like, he got burnt out going from Boise State to Washington. Like, I just
But what if you did the Ed Orgeron thing? You just did it for like 3 to 4 years, want to do a whole recruiting cycle, win a natty, and then retire again.
Because it's possible. I think there's some guys that are wired that way that are like, I just wanted to prove it to myself I can do it kind of thing. That's why I feel Urban Meyer is probably going to end up back in college somewhere else, you know, just that competitive drive.
I really hope not.
Who knows? But Chris Peterson does not seem like that guy that's just like, I don't know, that didn't get enough, that just like still fiending. He seems like the kind of guy that's like content in what he's accomplished as a coach. Like, he might get back into coaching, but being the coach at LSU and the SEC, like, that's right back into the fire. Like, that doesn't seem like, just not that I know who it, not that I know him as a person at all, but just his like persona, that just doesn't seem like something he would do.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, let's move on. We'll see what happens. Quickly, Oklahoma State, Iowa State. My biggest takeaway from this game was, did you see the touchdown that was called back in this one?
Yeah, that was just trash.
What are we doing here?
Like, the players don't want this. The fans don't want this. Like, who cares?
And but honestly, it wasn't even egregious.
It looked like you could see him stop. Like, he thought about high stepping the end zone and he did it like one step. He's like, oh wait, I can't do that. And then he just like went to the end zone. Like, it was just like one high step was enough to get a touchdown. And where did it get called back to? Like the 20 is like a 15-yard penalty from like the spot.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a trash ruling for what happened on the field. Like, NCAA, come on. Let the kids play, as they say.
Just preposterous.
Yeah, I thought Oklahoma State was going to find a way to somehow pull this win out, too. That's just what they've done all season. They just haven't really looked impressive, and then fourth quarter comes, they're in a position to win, and the luck ran out.
Maryland, Minnesota. Have you looked at the disparity between the Terps beginning of the season versus, it's like the how it started versus how it going meme? Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
Well, I mean, just like, look at their schedule. Have you perused what their scores have been through this court point in the season?
Would you like me to read it off to you? We were all high on them when they were scoring points early on.
Can I read you what happened to this season?
Yeah.
Okay. Beat West Virginia 30-24. Great opening win. Beat Howard 62-0. Beat Illinois 20-17. Beat Kent State 37-16. Since that Kent State game on September 25th, 51-14 against Iowa, 66-17 against Maryland, 34-16 against Minnesota. I mean, just when you talk about the wheels coming off, from what was a promising season. Injuries are a part of it with them, but goodness gracious, Maryland is quite not ready, and Minnesota is just they're solid. Minnesota is just solid. PJ Fleck, another name maybe to watch out for the LSU job. That dude is just solid, and what he's doing in Minnesota is pretty impressive, and he actually gives me a LSU coach vibe anyway. But
Maryland's got the luck of being like that SEC West team that also has Georgia and Florida on the schedule too from the East.
So it's hard to judge how much progress they're making because they're just getting blasted by the best of the best. But then there are some good wins sprinkled in there. But it's just, I don't know.
But 4-3, like, you could convince me that they might not win another game this season.
Yeah, that schedule's brutal.
Rutgers and Indiana, like,
maybe. I think they split those.
Yeah, maybe. And then the other three, I think, are losses. So.
Yeah.
We'll see. Not great for the Terps.
Speaking of not great, Boston College without Phil Dracovic.
Unfortunately, I didn't sell my Boston College stock while it was high, you know. Mm-hmm. But I have sold the stock, and
you have moved.
They are one of now two winless teams in the ACC in conference play. So
who is the other?
0-3.
Duke. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So. Not great. Even Florida State and Syracuse are ahead of them in the Atlantic standings at this point. So they are they're not going to be going to Charlotte anytime soon.
Yikes. San Diego State.
Unless they're just playing NC State and they just happen to be down in Charlotte. I don't know.
Oh, poor NC State Wolfpack. Poor Wolfpack. Air Force Falcons fall to the San Diego State Aztecs. A really gutsy win from the Fighting Brady Hoax here. My stat for you. So they bottled up. Essentially what happened here is San Diego State's good defense, the rushing defense, bottled up Air Force. We talked about it before the game. If Air Force could run on this defense, then they were probably going to win. If they can't, they'll lose because that's the Air Force offense. And they only ran for 192 yards. They averaged 336 coming in. Didn't happen. Lost the game. All that being said, so there is this punter / kicker on San Diego State. Last name Areza. Matt Green, this man got off an 81-yard punt in the first quarter. It was, this is preposterous. I pulled this from the AP. It was the second consecutive week Areza had an 80-plus-yard punt. This man is also their field goal kicker. So in this, he also had a 50-plus-yard field goal. Back-to-back weeks, this man has had an 80-plus-yard punt and a 50-plus-yard field goal. What is this man going first round in the NFL draft next year? What is this?
Do the Raiders have a pick in the end of the first round?
I might
take a chance on him. No, mad respect for that though. Like, I always respect a good punter. Punters are not respected enough.
Punter / kicker, sir. Just an all around special teamer.
But kickers get respect. I feel like the kickers put up the points, like they get the glory, get the game winning field goals. The punter, the way they can flip the field position, not enough respect to those punters out there.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's my PSA.
That's fair. Nevada, Fresno. Nevada let me down. Carson Strong set a school record, 49 completions on 61 attempts in one game. Threw for 476. Dude passed all over Fresno, but Fresno still pulls it out. A little bit more efficient. Nevada can't run the football whatsoever. Played from behind, but tried a late fourth quarter comeback. Came up just short. I heard someone.
I don't want to toot my own horn. That's just how I've called it.
Okay.
To be honest.
Okay.
It was. I knew these two passing offenses could keep up, but Fresno's ability to run, that's what kept them honest. But what were you gonna say?
Jay Norvell. This was like the two coaches in this one are both going to be Power 5 coaches and probably going to be really elite ones wherever they go. Jay Norvell with Nevada and the OC from Indiana's Fresno's coach, Kalen DeBoer. Both great and would not be surprised if both are Pac-12 coaches next year. I think it was Bruce Feldman who said that watch out for Jay Norvell for Washington State as that job came open. So... Name to keep it. That'd be a home run hire for the Cougs if they could pull that off. Norvell's going to be great wherever he goes.
But I think these days, I think you're seeing less and less of those moves because a guy at Nevada just – like you can do your own thing at Nevada and have some success. And then once you go to a low-level Power 5 team, it's not always an upgrade. So I feel like you're seeing like, yeah – Washington State's in the Pac-12, but that's not a good Pac-12 job. So I could even see someone like that holding out for something better.
He's held out for a while though, and the risk of that, because there's a risk it for a biscuit situation, Matt, and it's that, do you believe that you can make this sustainable? Do you believe that Nevada can be sustainably winnable for enough time for you to get the job that you really want, right? Because the bottom can fall out, and then, I mean, after going 8-4 3 years in a row at Nevada or whatever, and then having a couple 4-8 years after a couple of bad recruiting classes, or you get killed in the portal, and that just upends a couple seasons. Like, that's a possibility, and then you fall off the radar. So, I don't know.
That's fair, but if you're a good coach, it doesn't seem like that kind of thing typically happens. Because if you're truly a Power 5 level coach, that's in the Mountain West, that's in the American or something mm-hmm. like that, the AAC, you're usually out coaching the guys at your level. So yeah, if you start to go 4-8, well, then you're probably going to fail at Washington State anyway. But I think there's just a lot of these good coaches that you can continue doing your good thing at Coastal Carolina, at University of Louisiana, and those Power 5 schools are noticing.
That's true. And I also wonder if this is going to be an interesting fallout of the playoff expanding to 12 this fall, is that I wonder how many of these Group of 5 coaches are like, well, because the Power 5 is gone. Like, that's something that's not talked about, is like, once that expands, the Group of 5 and Power 5 model is gone. Like, there's no Group of 5, there's no Power 5. It's the 12 best teams get picked, right? And if you're a Group of 5 school and you schedule well, and you schedule well enough, and you see like Cincinnati and maybe another undefeated Group of 5 who just take some chances on the calendar, like, I think we'll see the BYUs of the world, the Boise's, whatever, they get opportunities. So you're like, if you're Andy Avalos and you build another juggernaut at Boise, why would you leave for the Cougs or whatever? Like, you can just make the playoff and win a bunch of games in Boise. Yeah,
exactly. And I think you've seen a lot of these guys. I know, like, Chad Morris is one mm-hmm. that we like to talk about a lot. It's just that they took that low-level Power 5 job. Obviously, Sam Pittman's doing a lot better with Arkansas than Chad Morris ever was. But just because it's Power 5, some guys are seeing it doesn't necessarily make it a better job than the previous one you were at. The money's better, though, so it's hard to talk people out of that.
But it's different priorities, different strokes for different folks. Southern California, Notre Dame. Notre Dame, did you see the light show before this one?
I did. That's pretty cool looking.
That was the best one I've seen thus far. After everyone who's done it, like Georgia, Tennessee did it a couple weeks ago, or I guess it was a week ago now. A lot of different schools are adopting this as more and more money gets pumped into these stadiums, but it was pretty cool. The Irish, who have had problems on the offensive line with injuries, people being in and out all year, they were able to run on USC, and they only gave up one sack with Jack Cohn under center. This was the most complete Notre Dame's looked in a while. They're, I think, 11th in the AP poll at the moment. They're fine. Good win. But it was just weird to see, like, just there was no buzz for this game. Like, none. Like, I think before the season, we would have circled this as like, oh, I can't wait for this one. This one might decide a playoff spot, right? Like, Notre Dame USC before the season could have decided a playoff spot. Now it was just another game. And it just, that bummed me out during the season where I'm like, man, I would have loved to have been excited about Notre Dame USC on a Saturday night. That would have been nice to be really, really amped up for that. But we didn't have it.
Yeah, and I think that's what people mean when they say, you know, college football is better when X program is good, when Y program is good. I think that's kind of what people were talking about, is we got this USC Notre Dame game, one of the better rivalries in all of sports. Is this one of those that had the trophy?
The shillelagh, right?
The jeweled shillelagh, that's what I was thinking. This used to be like one of the cooler rivalries in college football. Charlie Weiss got a contract extension for almost winning this game. USC, they've fallen a long way, and so there's just just nothing really to talk about with this game. Did you see the video before this game of the player being interviewed about the weather?
I did not.
Someone told him that, like, is he ready for the cold in Indiana? He's like, no, I've never been to Indiana. And they said, yeah, I heard it's going to be in the 40s. And this man said, did you say 40? Like, his eyes just lit up. Like, it was hilarious, honestly. Like, once I saw that, I saw some tweet. It was like, Notre Dame by 100, you know? But, yeah, it was pretty funny. But, yeah, Notre Dame, like, yeah, they look solid, but they still don't look like anything impressive necessarily. Like, they don't really scare you. I feel like this USC team just isn't good. I'm just really curious to see what USC is moving forward. I can't wait to see how this coaching search ends.
We'll see. I wonder if they get hurt by the LSU opening. I wonder if how much that affects them. I mean, if Miami opens up, there's just going to be a lot of dominoes, because I think some good coaches are going to leave good programs, so we're going to see other jobs come open just because they got plucked by somebody else. So I think this coaching cycle is going to be nuts. The vibe I'm getting is this coaching cycle is going to be pretty bonkers. Last game on our pick'em, Utah, Oregon State. What did I say going in? If the Beavs were able to run the ball like they've been running the ball the last 4 weeks with BJ Baylor, just an absolute stud, the best running back you haven't heard of. Folks, stay up or be like me and watch it on Sunday mornings. Watch the Beavs in action. But 260 on the ground for OSU, 468 total against a very good Utah defense in this game, because Pac-12 after dark, like, it's just it's a delight. It's a delight. There was a block punt, an ejection, and just all kinds of great stuff in this one. So I would highly encourage the folks who did not watch this one all the way through. Very much enjoyed it. Utah's offense was great as well. Kyle Whittingham and Jonathan Smith, two of the best coaches that you might not be all that familiar with, but Jonathan Smith is an absolute star, and what he has done at Oregon State and Corvallis is phenomenal. So shout out to the Beavs. They have one too many losses to really get into some Rose Bowl type stuff, but yeah, great stuff from the Beavers.
They can still win the Pac-12 though. Like,
they can.
They just have the one conference loss.
I cannot wait for the Civil War. It's gonna be bonkers. Like, people should be ready, because I think the Beavs should be favored in that one.
You know about the doomsday scenario happening in the Pac-12 right now, though.
BYU being crowned because they're undefeated in the Pac-12.
Honestly, yes, but Utah is. That was their first loss of the Pac-12 season. They're 4-3 on the year, but 3-1 in the Pac-12. The other team that's 3-1 in the Pac-12 right now is Arizona State. Mm-hmm. Like, Utah has that win over Arizona State. So Utah, with the two losses out of conference, like, this is just has all the makings of one of these ugly conference championship games where it's number 8, number 7 playing an unranked team, and Utah somehow figures out how to get in the conference championship at like 8-3,
and they beat Oregon
or something. Yeah, like, it's not looking good. Like, Arizona State and UCLA coming out of the South, obviously USC was the original pick for to come out of the South. It's like all those like carried weight. Like, I picked Utah to win the South. Like, you remember that? Like, I was a believer in Charlie Brewer, but I jumped off the ship weeks ago, and now they still have a chance to be in the South, and I think it's more of an indictment on the Pac-12 South right now than Utah being a legit contender.
Absolutely. Well, let's run through the rest of the games. On Friday night, Arizona came within 5 points of beating the Washington Huskies 21-16. Just an absolute, like, John Donovan still having a job as the OC of Washington is just preposterous. Jimmy Lake's in trouble, potentially. Defense is still great, but this is unacceptable. If you're a Husky fan, this is just bad. And Arizona is probably the worst Power 5 team in the country. Cincinnati 27, Navy 20, OU 35, KU 23. What is your final answer on the Caleb Williams lateral?
Well, to me, I was definitely saying Kansas got hosed, because I felt like the running back crossed the line of scrimmage and then got pushed back. But by the rule, they're saying the whole body has to be past the line of scrimmage. So I think they may have gotten it right. It was just lame. honestly. Like, Kansas got the stop. Like, it was a fourth down stop. Like, it was a heads up play by Caleb Williams. But I'm so skeptical when plays like that happen and they benefit the offense, because like we saw with Matt Corral, the sack they got, and stripped him and took it back for a touchdown. They ruled that the forward progress had already stopped and blew the play dead. Like, if Kansas rips that ball out and forces a fumble where, like, in the same instance, Caleb Williams rips it out, like, do they give him that fumble, or is forward progress stopped? You know, I kind of have a feeling forward progress is stopped. So I don't know. I felt watching it live, like, it's obviously a heads up play by him, but it felt illegal. Like, it felt like it just shouldn't have stood, but I think by the letter of the law, they didn't technically do anything wrong.
I like it.
But Oklahoma's in trouble, man. Like, having to mess around with Kansas, like
Caleb Williams is a star. I think it was Richard Johnson who made this point on Split Zone Duo today. My walk, I was listening to it, of just that, like, he's like, I can't prove this, but if Spencer Rattler was the quarterback in this one, they lose to Kansas. And I think he's right if you watch this game. Like, Caleb Williams did this.
I 100% believe that. And I think that's why, like, with Lincoln Riley, man, like, if Georgia gave up 35 points at halftime, Georgia's down 35, even in 35-28 to Vanderbilt at halftime, are we calling Kirby Smart a defensive genius? Like, this guy's a defensive genius, and he's losing, or offensive guru, offensive wonder kid, whatever they want to call him. Down 10-0 to Kansas at halftime? You're like offensive guru. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, even those fourth down plays, like, the one Caleb Williams broke for a touchdown, and that one they got the first down, like, that was individual brilliance on Caleb Williams' part. Like, that wasn't a good offensive – that game was not a good offensive game plan. Like, they did not execute well. Like, I thought the star quarterback bailed out Lincoln Riley multiple times in this one.
Fair. But shout out to Lance Leopold. Toughest job maybe in the Power 5 outside of Vanderbilt. So, hey, being in it, as long as he was, I think that's a win for the program.
And shout out to Kansas for blowing up all their students' email. Like, hey, there's a game going on. We guys know you're not there because we're looking at the stadium. You should come. And then an hour later being like, we don't even care if you have your student ticket. Just get out there. Anyone can come in.
Absolutely.
That was awesome.
Absolutely. Let's keep moving here. Michigan 33 and you... 7, Ohio State 54, Indiana 7.
This season's working out like exactly how we predicted. Like, Ohio State was vulnerable at the start of the year, and now, you know, things are happening. They're coming together, and they're looking like the class of the Big Ten once again.
Tennessee 24, Bama 52. If you did not watch this game, this score makes it just tells a completely different story. Like, after 45 minutes, Tennessee was very much in this one. They ran out of gas, didn't have the bodies, but there was so much questionable stuff. Like, Tennessee lost a timeout because they reviewed a touchdown fumble call where Bryce Young did fumble. And then a Tennessee player did leave the pile with the ball, but they did say that he recovered in the end zone. So, I mean, we never got like a clear picture of that, so I don't really know what happened there. It's whatever. Tennessee,
like, you could clearly see that Bryce Young recovered the fumble.
No, because he didn't. Like, the person who left the pile with the ball was a Tennessee player.
Yeah, that's tough.
But either way, like, Tennessee lost the timeout, and that's what the GIF came from of Heupel saying that's BS, is that, like, they still took a timeout because they said it was a challenge. But it's like every touchdown is reviewable. So what are you talking about? So that happened. The broadcast was atrocious. Like, Greg McElroy and I forgot who was in the booth with him, but it was
that Tessitore?
No, it wasn't Tessitore. It was the guy who's also the White Sox play-by-play guy. But I think it's Jason something, but it was not good. It was a really bad broadcast, and there were some really questionable calls in this one. Bryce Young struggled. There was a lot of issues with their offense. Brian Robinson.
I could say Bryce Young struggled, though.
He did.
I thought this was one of the more impressive games I thought I'd seen from Bryce Young, because I felt like we finally saw what he's capable of doing with his legs.
That was, like, the thing, yes. But that's like been the crux for the Tennessee defense. Like, when Emory Jones, Matt Corral, and Bryce Young, them getting out in space, Tennessee has done a really, really rough job of covering running quarterbacks. When they move on third and long, because Bryce Young had some backbreaker third down runs, and that was huge, but he was good. Like, Bryce Young's good, but I don't know. There's just something about this Alabama team. Like, we had another block punt in this one. Alabama's offense was just clunky to me. Like, they ran Brian Robinson a lot. Like, they were not featuring anybody else in this one for the most part. Some key drops by Alabama players. Yeah, they had a lot of penalties in this one. Tennessee was not able to run on them at all, and that was something that Tennessee has been able to do. Like, Hendon Hooker was not right. Like, he was not wanting to run. He was clearly not 100% from last week, but he fought through it. But yeah, Tennessee was not able to run whatsoever, and they still had Alabama on the ropes going into the fourth quarter. Like, on the ropes. I mean, Heupel punted on fourth and one, took a delay game when the Vols were down one touchdown, and then Alabama had a long drive touchdown to go up two scores, and then that was when Tennessee immediately responded with the big bomb to Tillman. But yeah, I don't know. I was not impressed by Alabama in this one. I don't think Alabama is the same. Like, there's just something off with them this year. They do a lot of dumb stuff.
Yeah, they don't seem the same disciplined Alabama team mm-hmm. that they always are. Like, in terms of, you know, we saw like the penalties and just, yeah, kind of dumb stuff that you just never see Alabama teams do. But at the same, and just giving up the huge chunk plays, like Tennessee just was carving them up with some big plays offensively. And I feel like, what was it, 31-24 after Tennessee scored in the fourth quarter? And then once that bad interception happened, that really seemed to just kind of...
That was a backbreaker.
Yeah, that seemed to be everything. I think they were up 38-24 mm-hmm. At that point. So, like, Tennessee was driving to kind of stay in the game. So once that happened, that was really all she wrote. But, yeah, I think I kind of feel the same way. Like, this Alabama team is definitely still a great team. Like, I think offensively, they're about as good as any team in the country. I think Bryce Young, what throws me off about Bryce Young is, like, he came after Tua and Mac Jones, and so it's like, well, he's just going to keep doing the same thing Tua and Mac Jones are doing, and the stats all look the same, but he hasn't necessarily done it the same way. It seems like it's a lot of short stuff, a lot of dumping it off to the running backs, a lot of these RPOs where you throw it to a guy behind the line of scrimmage, and the Alabama playmakers just kind of make plays, you know? This was the first game that I felt Bryce Young looked remotely like a Heisman Trophy winner. Like, I felt like he at least looked like the playmaker he's getting hyped up to be, and not just the cog in the machine that's like, oh, the quarterback's hitting open receiver here. Like, that's kind of what he had been to this point. It was just the offense is working, he hits the open guy, touchdown, it works. He wasn't necessarily doing anything to stand out. I feel like this game, he was required to actually make some plays, keep some plays alive with his legs. And yeah, he was making Tennessee defenders look bad when he was actually running the ball. So I was impressed by Bryce Young. I think with what, because we're obviously considering Georgia every time you watch Alabama, kind of how they match up with each other. And I think this is what it's going to take for a team to give this Georgia defense a hard time. It's going to be someone who can legitimately, you know, expose the defense vertically. So I'm definitely interested in how it's going to shake out. But obviously, Georgia, we got to see them get past Florida and get through Knoxville first.
We'll see. It's going to be a fun one at the very least. But I told Prince, because people were getting excited, I'm like, Georgia's going to be a much, like, Bama is not, I don't think, anywhere near, especially with the front seven of what Georgia's throwing. Like, Tennessee can't block. They're really banged up right now on the offensive line. And Hooker is getting beat, his brains being, like, with Jordan Davis and Carter and Wyatt. Like, I don't think the downfield shots are not going to be there, because I don't think Hooker's going to have time to get those reads and get those plays off. The only way to get through it is the... Oh, that was the other thing, is McElroy just talking about, like, slowing it down. And I'm like, okay, for folks who are not aware, when you don't have the talent and when you only practice tempo and when the only advantage you have against Bama, and what Saban talked about all week was that, like, you can't prep for Tennessee because you can't prep for those kinds of tempo and that kind of game plan. Like, it's just really, really difficult to practice for. For him to be like, we should slow it down, and just really like you're getting ahead of themselves too much and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. I think you have a fundamental misunderstanding of how Tennessee stays in a football game with Alabama with the current state of their roster. And that is tempo, and then hope that that works. Because
but you got to do some of that fake tempo sometimes, you know, like no huddle, but then run the play clock down to 10 or something like that. Like, I feel like if you're going too fast and you're just going point for point with Alabama, just not many teams are going to be able to hang. Like,
but that's the only way you're going to be able to hang if you're Tennessee, is what I'm saying.
No, I hear you. I think you have to, it's got to be some kind of combination of keeping the ball out of the offense's hands too. Like, that has to be part of the defensive approach as well. Like, their offense can't score points when they're not on the field.
That's true.
But it's tough. Like, if you're not able to consistently run the ball on them, like, it's tough to play that way.
All right. Well, are you ready for our last segment of the night, our sticker segment, Matt Green, where we plant a sticker on a helmet and or headset of our favorite coaches and players of the weekend and remove one from those who did not deserve it? I have my ads. Do you have your ads?
Yes, sir.
Okay. BJ Baylor, Oregon State, goes off for the Beavs in a big home win against the Utes. Kenny Pickett takes down the Clemson Tigers and then has a cold one after it, as he mentioned on the broadcast. And
he's legal drinking age.
He's been legal drinking age for no less than seven seasons.
And I got to give one to Brett Bielema. I thought it was I'd like to see where I had it in our rankings of the coaching hires this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I had that one pretty high. I felt like that was a hire that was getting a little overlooked, just mainly because it's Illinois, and to get a coach with that much credit, with that much, you know, on his resume at Illinois was huge. So for him to get that win over Penn State, however BS the overtime periods were, it's a huge win.
People just don't like retreads, even though retreads can work. And retread, like the idea that it's always got to be new, it's like sometimes retreads are the right way to go.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason this guy was the head coach of Wisconsin and then got paid a bunch of money by Arkansas. Like, this guy can coach some football.
Remove a sticker. Maryland. Oh, man. Oh, Maryland. Got to remove it. Like, we'll, like, just, oh, poor Maryland. James Franklin. Like, I understand everything with the injuries and all that, but you can't lose to Illinois at home. You just can't. Like, so we give one to Bielema, but Franklin, you cannot lose that game. And then you have a couple. Our poor NC State Wolfpack, I think, is on your list.
Yeah, I just felt like this is going to be the worst ACC season ever if Clemson somehow finds a way to get back in the conference championship. Like, no one even wants to win the Atlantic at this point. I felt like NC State, because we talked about the gauntlet Wake Forest kind of still has. Well, I use the term gauntlet loosely in the ACC. But, NC State is just in the driver's seat. Like, even though Wake Forest is still undefeated, they still have to play NC State. And we all feel like NC State's the better team. For them to just lose to Miami, like, we were all wondering if Manny Diaz was going to make it, like, through the weekend with his job. Like, Miami is just in such a bad place. I felt like that was an inexcusable loss for NC State over the weekend.
Absolutely.
And then the other one I got, I'm taking a helmet sticker from Lincoln Riley. Like, I
you
told
really, you love driving that knife in Lincoln Riley, sir.
Like I told you, man, like, I'm starting to wonder if he's getting all these Heisman quarterbacks just by chance. Like, if he's not doing anything to actually make them into Heisman winners. But obviously you saw Jalen Hurts had a lot of success at Oklahoma, much more than at Alabama. But I just was not impressed with this Oklahoma offense, and I felt like the narrative, it's so easy to tell after the fact of, oh, well, you know, they were just asleep in the first half, and then they came out in the second half and scored 35 points, and they really got it together. But it's like, they didn't just start humming along offensively. Like, we saw the fourth down they had to convert there at the end when Caleb Williams ripped the ball from the running back. Like, we also saw the fourth down they had to convert when he broke the long touchdown run. Like, these were not easy drives by any means, and you're playing against Kansas. Like, Kansas. They've lost like, I think something like 16 straight games versus Power 5 competition or something. Like, now 17 straight, yeah. So it's just, it's ridiculous that game was as close as it was. So I gotta put Lincoln Riley on blast. He gets all the credit for this offense, but very rarely gets any blame when Oklahoma doesn't play well. So I'm taking a helmet sticker from him.
There you go. There you go. Matt Green, we can find you on twitter.com at @Matt_W_Green. Are you ready for Braves World Series coverage? When's the first game? When's game one?
Yes, sir. I am ready. That's a good question. You said, am I ready? And asked when the first game was. I believe is it Tuesday or is it?
It's tomorrow. Yeah.
So
8 yeah, o'clock tomorrow.
Tickets come on sale on Monday. So I'm hoping.
Are you going to be able to flip it like you did?
What's that?
Weren't you going to flip it or something?
No, I got game 7 tickets.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah, so
yes.
So are you not going to be able to turn that into like a credit?
I would guess not. But I mean, it would be credit in some way, but I'm guessing you can't just flip it around for the next series. But I actually have to call the box office. figure out exactly what my options are, but I'm definitely going to try to get into Truist Park, or at least at the Battery for one of these World Series games. It should be a crazy environment.
All right, Matt Green, always a pleasure, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, that'll do it for tonight's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. If you enjoyed listening to Matt and I talk all things college football, make sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or get your podcasts. New college football episodes during the college football season pop up on this feed on Mondays and Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. East Coast time, so go look out for that on this very feed. Follow Matt again at @Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at @Chase_Thomas. If you like today's show, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you are an Apple Podcast listener, go visit ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com. Go hit that subscribe button there, SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com, and email me if you have any email mailbag questions, anything like that, at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Again, that is ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. And new episode tomorrow morning. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.